Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to bridging the gap between adventure and adventurer by helping people select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Even if you buy the latest, greatest gasoline car, you are driving a dinosaur. Even with all its improvements, it's still early 20th century technology propelled by fossil fuel, and it spews pollution, adding to our climate woes. At least that's what electric car proponents like Elon Musk say. Electric cars, on the other hand, are the cars of the future. Actually, they're here right now, but in all honesty, they are really the technology of the late 19th century. Yeah, electric cars were around in the very beginning, only to be buried under ice. That's an acronym in the electric car world for internal combustion engines. The reasons for that are many, but they don't diminish the worthiness of electric propulsion. I mentioned Elon Musk. He is the guy running Tesla, and Tesla has put more electric cars on the road than any other company, and the invasion of these cars is just beginning. Almost every major manufacturer worldwide will be putting electric vehicles on the roads in the next year or two and have them on the drawing boards. It is inevitable. But there are those who may be resistant to this change. Perhaps they like the rumble of the engine. Electric cars are silent. Perhaps they like shifting gears. Electric cars don't have them. Perhaps they like making frequent trips to the gas station. Wait a minute, no one really likes that. And electric cars never stop at gas stations unless their drivers want a hot dog. But there are legitimate concerns about range and the usual anxiety over trading the tried and true for the unknown. So this hour, we are charged and ready to explore the pluses and minuses of electric vehicles with the clear knowledge that if you are 35 or younger, you will be driving one sooner or later, and probably sooner. We're joined by Ezra Dyer, automotive editor of Popular Mechanics. He joins us by phone. Welcome.
Hello.
Hi, good morning. And with us via Skype is Matt DiLorenzo. He's the senior managing editor for Kelley Blue Book. He'll be helping us understand the economics of this paradigm shift. Thank you for being here.
Good morning.
Good morning. And in our Spirit Square studio is a man who bought an electric car and turned it into an industry. He's actually one of the many YouTube Tesla fanboys, and I mean that in the nicest way. He's from our area. He's a car enthusiast and creator of the YouTube channel I One Tesla. Brian Jenkins, welcome to the program.
Well, thanks for having me.
Thanks for driving down here in your electric car. Am I being overly optimistic, Matt, in saying that the future is now for these cars?
No, I think there's going to be a considerable percentage of them, but it's not to say that internal combustion engines are going to go away completely. And I think that that's a problem with a lot of the rhetoric surrounding EVs, is that it seems to be an all or none proposition, and it really isn't. It's going to be a blend of vehicles, everything from traditional internal combustion engines through plug-in hybrids through pure electrics.
But when you have companies like VW, Audi, when you have Mercedes-Benz talking about putting one of these cars on the road, when Jaguar is planning to put a car on the road, when you have Tesla already with, how many cars do they have on the road, Tesla?
I don't even know. Okay. Hundreds of thousands.
Hundreds of thousands. I think they put
They're over 200,000 because the tax incentives are starting to go away.
Mm-hmm. And they put 63,000 on the road in the first quarter of 2019, which is below their estimates, but nonetheless, that's a lot of cars. Mm-hmm. And then there are other cars from other countries coming in here. So if manufacturers are at the stage when they're willing to not only put development dollars into these cars, but announce their rollout, it's here to stay, right? Matt?
I would challenge that. Okay. Just because you build something doesn't mean that people will buy it. And there's still the economics. An electric vehicle is still more expensive to build than a traditional internal combustion electric. And until that cost curve is bent down to where they're competitive in the marketplace, you're going to have a situation where it's going to be pushing the cars out there rather than demand pulling them out of the manufacturers. And that's been, even though Tesla sold 200,000 vehicles, EVs represent less than 2% of total sales in a 17 million unit market. So it's going to be quite some time before there is ubiquitous as ICE vehicles.
So, Ezra, he just mentioned the fact that these cars are expensive, at least more expensive than the average car, until the Model 3 base came out a couple of months ago, which is, I think, starts at $35,000, and that's comparable to a lot of ICE cars. But they are more expensive in general, and gasoline prices here are not that expensive at the moment. So if the interest in these cars is rising, what's driving it?
Well, I think, first of all, that if you're focused purely on the economics of it, that's always changing. And there's also the Nissan Leaf and the Chevy Bolt. There are non-Teslas that aren't that expensive. The new Kia Niro EV, that pencils out to about $30,000, and it goes 230-something miles, I think.
Okay.
So that's getting better and better all the time. So I think you shouldn't focus on the economics aren't perfect right now, so these will never take over, because you can't really see even 5 years into the future what might change on that front or on battery technology. Become, you know, maybe we'll have twice the range, maybe not in 5 years, but we know that within like 3 years we're going to have silicon anode batteries that will either give you 30% more range or 30% less expensive batteries. Like, that's happening. So if you look 10 years out, you know, I mean, 15 years ago, we had no Teslas. So you just don't know what's going to happen.
So there's
can I make a point here? That
yes.
That hasn't happened yet. And if you take a Kona EV versus a base Kona, there's still a $10,000 spread. That's not peanuts in this market.
And General Motors tried this earlier. I think in the 90s they put out a car. What was the they didn't seem to be aggressively selling. And in fact, they haven't been aggressively selling the Bolt, to the best of my knowledge. What's behind, why produce a car and then not really push it, not even make people aware of it in some cases at some dealership? What's behind that, Ezra?
Well, the problem with the Bolt, from knowing someone who was at GM while it was being developed, is that, again, battery technology is progressing so quickly that, and controllers and motors and everything else, that when they started designing the Bolt, they were shooting for just 150 miles of range. That's what they wanted. So that's why they didn't make it a crossover, which is a much more saleable vehicle. So you've got to think about it like, if the Bolt were not electric, would people want it anyway? Would they want this sort of tall hatchbacky thing? Probably not, but they didn't make it a crossover because they were worried about range. Meanwhile, the battery technology got so much better, even in those few years, that they shot for 150 miles and ended up at 238. So the next time around, they're going to get it right, and I don't think it's a matter of them not promoting it. It's just a matter of whether that particular car would be something people want, whether it's electric or not.
So, Brian, you're a Tesla owner, you're a Tesla driver, you have two Teslas, as a matter of fact, must make a lot of money. when did you get your first Tesla?
October of 2017.
Why?
It's for my wife, because we live up in Mooresville, and she works in Charlotte, and the autopilot and all the technology was what really drove the decision.
So it wasn't the electric, and was it partly the price of gasoline or the fuel savings because electricity is cheaper, or was it the autopilot feature, which essentially allows the car almost to drive itself?
It's really close. It's very close, the autopilot is. It was everything combined. I mean, not going to the gas station. My wife hasn't been to the gas station since we got the Tesla. I mean, to get drinks or a hot dog. But you know, it's just the convenience of filling up your car at home, the technology of it being the safest car in the world, and just the no maintenance whatsoever.
Was it the safest car in the world in 2017 when you got your first one?
I believe it was. It was close.
Okay.
I think the headlights kept it out of the safest. Or
and
something.
You, what role has Tesla, in your mind, played in making people aware of the option of an electric car?
Well, the difference I see between with a Chevy Bolt and Tesla just sells electric cars. So that's what they're pushing, obviously. And it's directly to the customer.
But they don't advertise.
They don't advertise.
So how do you explain the growth in Tesla, number one, and number two, the fact that the profile of electric cars has risen because of Tesla? They don't advertise anywhere.
They don't advertise, but they do the same model that Apple does. They rely on editors, they rely on media, and now YouTube, to push their product out.
I must say that it's a cult.
It is. It's a good call.
It's just like Apple.
We just don't poison the Kool-Aid.
When you pass the Apple store at South Park, it's full of people, and you think, what are they doing in there? And the same thing is true if you go to Matthews to the Tesla location. So what has been the role? Because you're not the only person on YouTube who has a Tesla channel.
Every Tesla owner has a YouTube channel.
There are thousands of you guys, and you're all making money on these channels. So what has been the role of the YouTube of the Tesla enthusiasts on YouTube in popularizing, particularly that brand in particular, but electric cars in general?
I mean, it's a different car. It's not like any other car, and it's fun to go out and drive. It's a totally different experience. You have to drive one to understand it. It's the idea that every month you get an update for your car, and something's new. You get something else for free, and it's a fun experience to go out and test how good autopilot is. It's not like any other car, and any electric car is really not like any other car.
Ezra, do you think that's true, that this is not like that electric cars in general, Tesla in particular, but electric cars in general, because of their propulsion, that they're not like any other cars?
Well, it's true. They do. I mean, I drive everything, and they change your frame of reference and do make it kind of hard to get excited about the latest internal combustion engine that has 15 more horsepower than last year, but is essentially the same thing that's been built for 100 years. They're inherently quiet and smooth, and, you know, a Nissan Leaf can kind of ape a Rolls-Royce in terms of refinement, just because that's the nature of electric motors. There are no pistons smashing up and down underneath the hood with explosions. And Tesla's great, besides the fact that they did get ahead of everybody on technology. Just design, the fact that they said an electric car doesn't mean you're taking your medicine and you have to show everybody how virtuous you are by driving something that is otherwise deeply uncool. They said, here's a cool car, and it's electric.
When Matt, you're with Kelley Blue Book. When people are looking for cars, I would imagine that Kelley Blue Book, particularly the website, has the technology to quantify what searches, how many searches are conducted for electric cars. Have you noticed an uptick, or if you're keeping track of that?
We haven't noticed an uptick, but more importantly, one of the differences between the Tesla and the other electric cars on the market is that it's held its value, and that's because of the range and the technology present in the car. The Leaf and a lot of these early generation electric vehicles that only had 90 or 100-mile range depreciated to next to nothing. So you look at a lot of these early vehicles, they didn't hold any resale value because people felt, well, 90 miles, 100 miles isn't enough. But on the other hand, Teslas have retained their value, and a big part of that is the usability of the car and advanced technology, like the over-the-air updates and things like that, that keep the cars more contemporary.
Well, let me ask you a quick question, because we're coming up to a break on this. But I got a notice on my phone this morning from The Verge, who says that some company overseas in Europe someplace has developed a battery that will get 600 miles to a charge. Mm-hmm. So if you have a very expensive electric car right now, and suddenly this 600-mile battery becomes available, is your car worthless?
Not necessarily. I mean, by the same token, if I were in the market looking for a car for my high school kid, I'd buy him a Leaf. He'll never get more than 80 miles from home. He won't go more than 85 miles an hour. You don't have to give him a gas card that he's going to buy snacks with at the gas station.
Matt DiLorenzo, Senior Managing Editor of Kelley Blue Book. He's with us along with Ezra Dyer for Popular Mechanics and Brian Jenkins from i1 Tesla. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that believe a car is used for more than just getting from place to place. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about electric cars today with Brian Jenkins, who's from Mooresville, but he is an international Tesla star. I'm not kidding. You're laughing, but it's true. He's the creator of i1 Tesla. It's a YouTube channel. He's one of many Tesla owners who have YouTube channels, and they do a lot to explain electric cars and keep you up to date on the major manufacturer of electric cars, which is Tesla, obviously, although there are others in the pipeline. They're coming, and some are already here. Ezra Dyer joins us by phone. He's automotive editor of Popular Mechanics. Matt DiLorenzo is senior managing editor of Kelley Blue Book. We've gotten a text this morning. More like, is it a text or is it a Facebook comment? It's a Facebook Live comment, because we're on Facebook Live in the studio, from somebody who says they are watching this conversation from their Tesla. Pull over. All right, let's talk about range.
Put it in autopilot.
That's right. You still got to drive. How far can you drive? Is the concern over range a valid one? Brian, you have two of these.
Not with the Tesla. My range is 325 miles, which just increased. I got a software update which increased it from 310 to 325 after owning it for a year.
How do they do that?
Just
upgrade the software? What did they do?
It's just allowing the computer to optimize
unlock
the
more
motor.
Of the battery. Okay.
All it's not unlocking more of the motor. They increased the power by 5%, but it's all software related.
Okay.
They kind of have dialed down the motors, I believe.
So when you got your first one, and you had a gasoline car prior to that, did it scare you that you were going to run out of juice?
At first, when we first got it, less than a month later, we drove back up to Ohio, because that's where I'm from, for Thanksgiving. And going up 77, there wasn't that many superchargers. Now there's five. And, you know, that really got the range anxiety out of the picture right away, because the car tells you exactly how many miles you have until you, or how long you need to charge to get to the next
supercharger. And we'll route you to the next supercharger. The Tesla supercharger, that's a network of essentially Tesla gas stations.
That's the key to Tesla.
Yeah. So, Ezra, how does this work if you don't own a Tesla? Because you can't use those. They're not compatible with other cars. Teslas can plug into things on the side of the road. It's a slower charge, but you can plug them in. And charge, you can plug them in at your house and charge, but these other cars can't. So is that holding it back? Is that holding buyers back? Because there's a gas station on every corner, but you can't find an electrical outlet that you can use anywhere. Is that what's holding them back, Ezra?
Well, that is still a huge advantage for Tesla. And everybody who's locked, you know, if you can get to the supercharger, then you it's a much easier trip than somebody who is outside of the Tesla ecosystem. And the first time I drove a Nissan Leaf in L.A., I ended up plugging it in my hotel room with a cord through a sliding window.
How long did that take?
That was overnight. And then later, you know, the car logged the charging station. So Nissan called me and said, hey, where was that charger? We don't want to use that again. I said, oh, that was room 108. But now... Electrify America is building out a huge infrastructure of chargers, DC fast chargers, which is funded by Volkswagen. So their emissions naughtiness, they're paying it back sort of with a charger network. And I just used that last week, or the week before. I took a Kia Niro EV from Washington, D.C. to North Carolina. And I think it was about a 350-mile trip, and it involved one stop at Electrify America. And, you know, you got to stop and have lunch, but then you're good to go and you're on your way again. And it's not as easy as it is with a Tesla, but I think it's going to get there.
So, Matt, should we be talking about standardizing all these different charging networks that are cropping up, not only here in this country, but around the world? If Tesla can only talk to Tesla and can talk to if your car can only talk to certain kinds of things. It's not like I can only buy BP gas. I can buy ExxonMobil if I want. Is that what has to happen? Standardization?
No, because I think what will happen is that things like ChargePoint and other vendors will get into the market that will address all vehicles. And I think that's one of the marketing, it's part of the marketing genius really of Tesla, is the fact that they want, like Apple, they want to keep their people in their own ecosystem, but they can still venture out because you can use an adapter and use a ChargePoint charger. So that's more of more Apple-ness from Tesla than anything else. And I don't think that'll affect the widespread availability, because once a lot of manufacturers have electric vehicles out there, they're going to need that support. And this gets beyond, you know, everybody talks about range anxiety, and my latest mantra is that there's going to be recharge anxiety. In other words, It's great that if you stop for lunch and you plug in and you get going again on a road trip, but if you're two or three people behind somebody else who's charging, that's going to be the bottleneck. We're going to have as many charge stations out there as gas stations, because the last thing you want to do is wait an hour just to use the charger. That's going to take you maybe a half an hour to recharge your car.
If you were a gas station operator, would it be smart for you to install charging stations in addition to your pumps?
Yeah, you're starting to see that already in some places, and ChargePoint is an interesting operation, because they're like a gas station or an oil company in that they don't own all their charge facilities. It's a franchise system, so there's a lot of business opportunities for people to kind of get in on the ground floor and help electrify America.
So what seems to be the sweet spot where people start thinking more comfortable, they start feeling more comfortable, Ezra, about driving an electric car? Where does the range have to be for them to say, okay, I could live with that?
I would say 200 miles seems to be the magic number for a lot of people, because that would cover most commutes, even getting you there and back. When you go under that, I mean, it's still probably enough, but you think about it a little bit more. Like even the new Leaf that has 150 miles of range, I drove that to Charlotte, which is about a two-hour drive for me, and I had to stop once on the way there to charge, and then I had to stop once on the way back to charge. So that's getting to the point where it's kind of inconvenient to do, as it turned out to be a 250-mile trip. But I think once you're above that 200-mile range, which is seeming to be pretty common now with the new the Hyundai Kona, the new Kia, the Soul EV, and the Niro, the Bolt, like 200 miles is kind of like your baseline now, I think.
You were shaking your head when he talked about 200 miles being the sweet spot.
That's right. True, because there's a lot of cars out there that do 200 miles, and no one's buying them. Everyone wants 300 or more.
Right.
And to make that switch from gas to electric, people want range. And once they get the range, they realize they don't need it. 200 is fine. On your daily commute, 200 probably is fine, or 250. But to make that jump from gasoline to electric, people want range. Everyone's talking about 400 miles now.
But part of that desire for range, unless you're taking regular road trips or your job mm-hmm. takes you every day 150 miles in each direction, I mean, the average commute is 30 miles.
Yeah.
So even on a small battery, you're covered by that unless an emergency crops up. But it's not like pulling into a gas station where you pull in, and if there's no cars, you can pull the nozzle out, stick it in your car, and 3 minutes later, you've got a full tank and you're gone. It takes a while to charge these cars. How long does it take you to charge? How many miles do you get?
325.
And you never discharge an electric car to fully empty, but you also don't fill it up to full.
Correct.
Ever.
And that's the reason why you don't want a 200-mile range, because you're only going to charge it to 200 or 180 or
okay.
more,
so,
or right around there.
So how long does it take you to charge at home? Three, 4 hours?
Well, I work from home, so I charge once in a while. But I charge my wife's car every day. She drives about 100 miles a day, mm-hmm. about 90 miles a day. And we have enough on the battery to go back and forth to work and then back again, because there's a supercharger here, just in case the power's out at home.
Right.
It takes maybe 3 hours, maybe. I don't pay attention, because we just plug it in and walk inside.
Because the range anxiety disappears when you realize you just plug it in and it's always full.
Yeah.
That's easy to say if you have experience with it, but going into it as a new owner, it can be daunting.
Yeah.
So how long does it take to charge it if there's nobody at the supercharger? These Tesla superchargers are faster than your home.
Correct.
So
it really depends on how long of a trip you're going and how much energy you need to get to the next supercharger, because you don't want to charge it fully. The first third of the battery charges a lot faster than the second third, and then the last bit takes forever.
So Dennis emails, and Ezra, maybe you want to chime in on this. Dennis emails that he wants to know how long it takes to recharge an electric vehicle, which we just talked about, and he points out it only takes less than 5 minutes to gas up my car. That's something I frequently read when I read about electric cars, or these are the questions that come in. Well, the gas station, I mean, 5 minutes. What's the answer to that, Ezra, from a non-electric car owner?
Well, again, I would say that you're focusing on right this minute what's possible and not what's going to be possible in a couple of years. So that's one aspect of it. You know, Porsche is going to have their 800-volt fast chargers out, which will give you some, you know, not exactly still comparable to a gas pump, but they're going to add a lot of range in 15 minutes. Right now, you know, if you have a Tesla, I think the highest number I've seen with plugged into a supercharger is they give it to you in miles per hour. I think it was like touching 300 miles per hour of charge that was going into it. Bottom line is it's still not as easy to take a long road trip in an electric car. That's not really where they're at right now. They're still perfectly feasible for most things you're going to do. But yeah, if you're going to go cross country, then that's probably not how you want to do it. But I think if you're focusing on that electric cars aren't there yet because it's not exactly like a gas station, then that's kind of missing the point.
Okay. The other thing about range that people have to consider is that just like a gas-powered car, even though you can look at the window sticker and it will tell you it gets X number of miles per gallon, that really is dependent on your driving style. It's dependent on road conditions. It's dependent on outside temperature because cars are more efficient depending upon the outside temperature. And the same is all true for these electric cars. Alan emails, I bought an electric Ford Focus last year. Most of the time it worked well, but one morning when it was 20 degrees, the range dropped. On warmer days, it worked great, but the dealer said the range is very limited when it's very hot or very cold. I returned the car and bought something else. So, Matt, how much can you lose on a really cold day? I mean, these Tesla cars are all over Canada. It's freezing up there.
Well, again, that depends on the technology in the car. And one of the things that Tesla does very well is thermal control of the batteries. So they keep them warm so they don't lose range, and they keep them cool when it's hot so they don't lose range. But a lot of the less expensive cars don't have that technology, and that those are the ones that are more heavily impacted by the weather. So that is an issue. And I think that that's one of the reasons why, and the road trip issue is one of the reasons why we're going to see a blend of vehicles. You'll see people who want plug-in hybrid vehicles that are electric part of the time, but still operate like a regular internal combustion engine car for that long road trip. So it's not, like I said earlier, it's not going to be all electric or none.
You conduct, Brian, these Tesla meetups where Tesla owners who connect, I guess, through your YouTube channel, you'll schedule the trip. We're going to go take a trip to the mountains from point A to point B. We'll have lunch at point C and we'll drive back. And it's this caravan of 100 Teslas taking over the roads and the parking lots. And you have conversations with these owners. Mm-hmm. What are they telling you about how they approach range anxiety on road trips and things like that?
Once you own a Tesla, there's really no range anxiety after owning it for a little while. I've gone on many trips. I just went up to Ohio to help my in-laws move. And that is normally a 7.5-hour drive. Mm-hmm. It took me 8.5 hours.
Because you have to stop and charge.
Because you have to stop and charge twice. But with autopilot, you don't feel the fatigue of driving a gas car. Not really just a gas car, but driving, really. You're sitting back paying attention, but you don't. It's a totally different mindset.
For people who don't know what you're talking about, autopilot is like cruise control on steroids, because not only does it keep you to a certain speed, it steers the car. It controls how fast it goes. When it needs to slow down, it does. And if you have advanced autopilot in these Tesla vehicles and you navigate on autopilot, it'll take the exit for you.
Yeah. It'll take interchanges. It'll take everything for you.
Pretty amazing.
And next month, it'll change lanes for you by itself.
Crystal on Twitter writes, I purchased a Tesla in, this is not a Tesla show, this is an electric car show, it's just that they have more Teslas on the road than any other electric cars. I purchased a Tesla in November and it has been a life changer. I actually enjoy driving, I feel safe, and the Tesla cult is more like a friendly fraternity. True?
True. I hear that all the time. Almost every video I post,
Do you feel like a group of early adopters, like you're on the wagon train moving west?
Not so much anymore.
Okay.
Not so much anymore. And when I first started the channel a little over a year ago, yes, it felt like that. But now, you see them everywhere. If you go remote places, you're not going to see a Tesla. But I see them everywhere now.
So the price has been.
I would also add that non-Tesla EV drivers are definitely not part of the Tesla cult, and sort might even sort of resent resent Teslas a little bit because I drove a Model X from North Carolina to Charleston. I stopped at the supercharger on I-95 and charged up enough to get to Charleston. And when I got there, the battery was pretty flat, so I plugged it in a normal city level 2 charger, which because the Tesla has such a huge battery, it was going to take 16 hours or something to charge. But I had time, so I left it there. And I got back, and there was a very angry note on the windshield from a Nissan Leaf owner who was mad at me for hogging the charger. Like, hey, man, I got a bigger battery. Sorry.
Yeah.
Wow. So price has been a factor for a lot of people because Teslas are the major manufacturer of electric cars, or have been in the last since 2012, and they've been really expensive cars. Now they have one at $35,000, and Hyundai has one with a range of 258 miles, starting at $36,450. I read yesterday. Is the marriage of range and price what will finally, Ezra, push these cars into the mainstream?
Well, yes, and probably once it gets a little bit better, because like Matt said, you know, your standard non-electric Hyundai Kona is still 10 grand less. But, you know, it's also the electric is a better driving experience. It's quicker, max torque at zero RPM. I mean, that little car, I did a 0-60 test on the Kia equivalent, and when you turn the traction control off, it smoked the tires for half a block, which I thought was pretty awesome.
You are a car enthusiast. These cars, aside from burning rubber, have no emissions whatsoever. And some say that they're helping to save the planet. But really, that's dependent on where you live. I mean, the Environmental Protection Agency says that the transportation sector accounts for 14% of global emissions, and the shift to electric cars would significantly reduce that number. Here in North Carolina, the power is pretty much generated by nuclear, hydro. There's some solar mixed in there, some natural gas and other renewables. There's some coal as well, but that's diminishing. But if you are an electric car owner in West Virginia and some places in the upper Midwest, it's all coal. So when we come back, I want to get an answer to this question. If you're concerned about the environment, is driving an electric car really helpful? We'll talk about that when we come back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about electric cars and their growth in the world today with Matt DiLorenzo, Senior Managing Editor of Kelley Blue Book, who can talk about resale value in a little bit. We'll talk about that. Ezra Dyer, Automotive Editor of Popular Mechanics, and Brian Jenkins, creator of I1 Tesla. It's a YouTube channel, and he's a Tesla owner, and he talks about Teslas. All things Tesla, as a matter of fact. So let's talk about people who buy these cars who are buying them in part because they are concerned about being environmentally responsible. They want to help the environment. Are you helping the environment? I'm not sure who to ask this question of, but are you helping the environment when you're considering that it depends on where are you just moving it to the smokestacks where they generate their electricity? When you consider that, where the power is generated. I'm rambling here. So, Ezra, are you helping the environment?
Well, I would say yes. I think the last Department of Energy wheel-to-well study, you know, showing the total carbon impact of your vehicle, whether it's gasoline or electric, said that if you were driving an electric vehicle in West Virginia, which has the dirtiest power of any state because it's all coal, you're still equivalent to a Prius, basically. And anywhere else, you're better. And it also depends on, there's so many individual factors. Like in my case, I put solar panels on my house. I don't have an electric car yet. I'm going to get one. But I anticipate that annoying question for people, oh, yeah, your electric car is powered by coal. They won't know it isn't. I've got solar panels. And just I have a fairly modest setup, and it makes enough power to run an electric car for 30,000 miles a year.
So, Matt, your electric car right now is powered by lithium batteries, and as the number of these cars on the road increase, there are going to be a lot of dead lithium batteries down the road 10, 15 years from now. Are you hurting the planet because of all these batteries being manufactured that are at some point going to be dead? What's the story there?
Well, I think the batteries will have some life after they've been used in cars. There's been some repurposing of the batteries for home usage to help level out spikes in the grid. And there are environmental concerns over precious metals and all sorts of things that go in the batteries. So we'll just have to see how that plays out. I think that question can be used by anybody who's against freedom of mobility and cars. You have to do a risk benefit assessment, as you have with internal combustion engines. They've gotten demonstrably cleaner over the years and aren't as big of an impact on the environment as they were, say, 30 years ago, 40 years ago.
And some people are concerned about the fact that these are lithium batteries, and we know what happens to lithium. It's an unstable environment, these batteries, and the airlines won't let you put two D-cell lithium batteries in your carry-on, because or you're in the stuff you're going to stow in the baggage compartment, because they think it's going to catch fire. Mm-hmm. You're driving a bomb.
I think that's one of the things. A lot of people are pointing to solid-state technology, to where you don't have an electrolyte in the battery itself that could be flammable. And the solid-state batteries also, in addition to being safer, also have other properties like more range and quicker recharge times, and it can take more cycles. That's one of the other things that you have to consider when you have an electric vehicle and you're using any sort of supercharging. Your batteries can only take so many cycles, and using a supercharger is the equivalent of using standard level 2 charging. It's a multiple. So it does degrade the battery more the more that you use quick recharges.
Because you're putting stress on the battery by pumping more power into the battery to store. But
on the type of battery, yes.
But you drive two of these cars, and mm-hmm. you've got lithium batteries in these cars. It's never occurred to you that, because you see these YouTube videos on other channels mm-hmm. where these cars explode into flames instantly, bang.
Not instantly.
Well,
you have about 20 minutes or so before it starts catching on fire, unless the battery's punctured.
But are they any more dangerous than you got a full tank of gasoline? That stuff's mm-hmm. explosive too. Is it any more dangerous? Are you any more concerned as a driver?
No, because I read an article about 3 months ago that there's more percentage of gasoline cars that catch fire than electric cars. So there's really not that concern. Yes, there's 75 kilowatts of battery underneath me, but it's a solid structure. It's going to take a pretty large impact to puncture that.
And at least in a Tesla, when you have that battery, and the batteries in a Tesla are under the car. They're under mm-hmm. the passenger compartment of the car.
And they're individual batteries, too. They're not plates.
Right. But the weight of that battery makes the car almost untippable.
Mm-hmm.
So that actually improves the safety of the car. Guy emails, why haven't fuel cells taken off, and is there enough lithium to make all of the batteries needed if these cars take off?
Well, they're coming out with batteries that have less and less lithium. I mean, Tesla's working on that, and they're working on recycling the lithium that's in the old batteries that they have. They're getting to that solid-state battery, and that's going to make it safer and more range. But, there is enough lithium. It's the cobalt that's really the bad part in the battery.
And Richard emails, my biggest concern is the operating life of the battery. I understand the replacement cost of a battery is almost as much as that of the car. Matt, what is the life cycle of these batteries?
Typically, they're saying 8 to 10 years. That's for a battery to fall beneath 80% or 70 to 80% of its usable life.
Well, explain that to me, because I know if you buy a cell phone today and you charge it every night, in 2 years, it will not hold the charge. I mean, you'll be out of battery within 7 hours.
Right.
So why don't electric cars do the same thing? It's the same battery, just a lot more of them.
Well, they do, and if you look at like the warranty on the Jaguar I-Pace, they're guaranteeing that after 8 years, that battery will still have at least it will hold 80% of its charge, and if not, they'll replace it. So those are the types of things that buyers should be aware of when they're shopping for an electric vehicle, is to find out you know, how much the manufacturer will stand behind the life of the battery. But again, that's still, you know, 80, if you go 8 years and typically people go between 12 to 15,000 miles, you're looking at, you know, 100,000 mile battery life. And most powertrain warranties are, the good ones are 100,000 miles.
Well, that's what Tesla has. They were on the Model S. It's an 8-year unlimited mile warranty on the battery and the motors.
Okay. So let's talk about what it costs you to fill up.
Mm-hmm.
Because we know what gasoline costs. We know mm-hmm. if you get 22 miles a gallon or 13 miles a gallon, whatever it is, you know you can calculate how much you're spending on gasoline every mm-hmm. year. How much are you spending on electricity? You got two of these cars.
My electric bill went up about $65, $70 a month with two of them.
So how does that compare?
I drive a lot, too. I have 18,000 miles on my Model 3, and my wife has, she puts about 20,000 miles a year.
So when you had gasoline-powered cars,
mm-hmm.
do you know what your gas bill was?
We were, for her car, driving back and forth to Charlotte, we were paying about $160 a month in gasoline just
for
her
car. So just one car was more than you're paying for two now?
Correct. It's a 75-kilowatt battery, and I pay 10 cents a kilowatt at home.
Right.
So it's only $7.50 if it's fully dead to fully charged.
I don't want to get into all this kilowatt stuff because people, it'll blow your mind.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
But I don't know what that means, that you have 75 kilowatts and you got 10 cents a kilowatt hour. And mm-hmm. That's part of the problem here. People, mm-hmm. it's a whole new language that people have to learn. But
I still have to learn it too.
It seems to me that the other consideration here, Ezra, is that with, and you mentioned this, I think, is that there are no pistons, there's no engine, there's no internal combustion engine, there are no hoses, there's no belts, there's no transmission, there's no oil changes, there's nothing in these cars to brake, really, is there? Ezra?
Well, I didn't know you were asking me. Well, there's a lot of all the other car stuff can break. You know, like I've been in Teslas that the door handle fails to pop out or the window doesn't roll back up when it pops down when you open the door. There's stuff like that that goes on. So people still have problems. You still have drive shafts and brakes and tires and all that. But it does remove a lot of that regular wear and tear stuff that you think about with a normal internal combustion car. No oil changes, no spark plugs. No air filters. I mean, I don't know what a dealership's going to do to rack you up for your 60,000-mile service on one of
these. Well, that's very interesting you mentioned it, because Tesla just put out a notice that because you're supposed to bring your car in, I think, once a year for service.
That's what they say.
And they were like $600 for the first service and $1,800 for the second-year service. Mm-hmm. And they didn't do very much, first of all, because there's not much to do. But they sent out a notice saying, we had so many of these cars on the road, and they've come in for the service, and we're finding absolutely nothing wrong. Don't bother to do it.
Yeah, don't bring it in.
Don't bring it in.
Yeah. There's no maintenance. Yeah,
replace
you just
your own
rotate
wiper
your
blade.
Tires.
Say that again?
Replace your own wiper blade.
Yeah, yes. You can change. Yeah. So there's wiper blades, washer fluid, there's brake fluid, obviously, mm-hmm. and there's the battery coolant fluid, but you don't change that very often. The other thing about this is you don't use the brakes very often on an electric car, do you? How often do you touch the brakes? Seriously. Be honest.
From 5 miles an hour to stop. I mean, that's it. Or an emergency.
Because of the regenerative braking. You take your foot off the accelerator, the mm-hmm. power in the wheels goes to regenerate the battery and
Correct.
Slows the car down by itself.
Yeah.
Takes a little getting used to?
It takes about a week to mm-hmm. get used to. And there's two different settings. So if you takes a little while to get used to it, like a regular gas car, you can it's not very difficult to get used to.
So, Ezra, are you hearing people say that they don't have to replace brakes in electric cars very often?
Yes, and it makes sense because, you can do all the regen thing, and most of the new cars let you select a one-pedal driving style where you can just do it all from the accelerator. Not the gas pedal, I guess, but the pedal on the right. You can control your speed well enough with just that, and you get used to it pretty quickly.
They call it one-pedal driving, in the interest of full disclosure, I must tell you that I have an electric car, and it's a Tesla, and I hardly ever touch the brake, mm-hmm. ever. I mean, I literally tap it. That's it. So, Roger emails, what are the major infrastructure changes that will have to be made to provide charging stations in the electric car future? Who wants to take that question?
Well, that's underway already. I think the interesting thing about electric vehicles is that you can't put a, typically you don't put a gas station at a place where you work. And a lot of places are putting in electric vehicle recharging stations. We our offices are in an industrial park here in Irvine, and ChargePoint has two or three charging stations in the facility. And at Kelley Blue Book, we have about a half dozen electric vehicle recharging stations in our campus. So, and we do have quite a number of employees who have EVs for a couple of reasons. One, you get the carpool lane sticker, which is a big deal out here in California. And two, there were some smoking deals on a lot of these vehicles. There's some people leasing Fiat 500Es for under $100 a month. So you do see a lot more EVs out here in California than you do in other parts of the country.
Austin on Facebook writes, I drive a Ford C-Max plug-in hybrid, very affordable, and my range is about 21 miles in the summer, 14 miles in the winter. But if I do small trips around town, which I usually do, I can get 90 miles a gallon. Love this car, which is being discontinued. Robert emails, several days a week, I drive in excess of 200 miles a day. Electric vehicles will never be an option until I can refuel in a 5-minute window. Even 30-minute charge times when you're in the middle of a road trip are unacceptable. What do you say to that, Brian?
I find them actually relaxing. I'm actually, Saturday, I'm driving down to Florida with my son, and it's a little bit longer trip, but it breaks the trip up. Every hour and a half or 2 hours, you get out, stretch your legs, get something to drink, you come back 20 minutes later, your car is enough to get to the next supercharger. If you're going for work and you have to be there at a certain time, yeah, it's a little different.
And Jason says, what is the maintenance cost of an electric vehicle versus gas-powered? I'm going to take it, and I'm not going to... Let's spread it out over several cars, not just Tesla. Ezra, what do you think the maintenance costs on these cars are?
Well, that's a pretty all over the place question. I might defer to the Tesla owner on this.
Okay, Brian.
I haven't had to pay for maintenance at all, except for tires. I need tires, but that's my fault. I went to the track and kind of ruined my tires. But there's really no maintenance whatsoever.
Because there's no oil changes.
Absolutely nothing.
You don't do the brakes very often.
Mm-mm.
Okay. Although, I would think if you have a trouble with your car, there's only one place that can fix it. You can't take it to the corner garage.
But you don't have to take it. They come to you. Mobile service is a wonderful thing.
Okay. John emails, I have multiple cars, and my all-time favorite city driving car is a Ford Fusion Hybrid. Once you know how to drive a hybrid, you can get 40 to 50 miles per gallon in a good-sized car. This car has close to 80,000 miles with no issues, and I don't plan to buy any more non-electric cars. However, Chris emails, I will never drive a Tesla for many reasons, but primarily because it is one large tracking device that sends everything back to Tesla. No, absolutely not, he writes. It is talking to the mothership all
yes.
the time, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is that
well,
a good thing?
So are any car. You know, like
yeah.
Ford just said something, the CEO said something a while back, like, oh, yeah, by the way, we've got all this information on you. Every car is networked now that's new, and that's not just a Tesla thing.
Yeah, I've heard of OnStar. That's doing the same thing for years.
Right, and they can track them, and you can General Motors, I think, has a Cadillac commercial on where they can stop your car if it's stolen. They can turn it off. Well, so can Tesla.
Mm-hmm.
But Tesla is sending information back to help Autopilot learn to drive the car better. Is that correct?
Correct. And then every car is safer.
All right. Is do you guys?
But if that guy's worried about that, he must not have a phone either, because that's the ultimate.
Yes, true.
Ezra Dyer, is this the future?
I think so. Sooner
Matt,
or later.
Do you agree? Matt, do you agree?
Oh
quickly?
Yeah, you're gonna see a lot more EVs, and they're gonna All become right. a lot more affordable. So
Matt DiLorenzo is the senior managing editor of Kelley Blue Book. Ezra Dyer, automotive editor for Popular Mechanics, and Brian Jenkins from Mooresville, creator of the i1 Tesla. YouTube channel. Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to helping customers select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.